Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
To go. 6:14 in the show continues. Show number 979. Ryan Burrow coming up live from Houston. Chuck Todd, Eric Edelstein, Pat Brady, Bill Brady, Rick Pearson, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, Dan Hampton, all on the show today. So, I don't know, Dave, you ready?
Is that all before 8 o'clock?
It's all before 9 o'clock.
No Carol Brady?
Carol Brady is not available.
Darn.
Marcia?
Which is Marcia, and Marcia, all available. Hey, let's do the top six, shall we?
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60 Minute Men.
American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling are the 60 Minute Men. Thank you for that. And for sponsoring the top six at six. Former hurricane downgraded to a tropical depression, forecasted to move through Louisiana and Mississippi today. There's two major problems outside of the imminent flooding. One is a chemical plant in Crosby, Texas, that could catch fire at any moment. Parts of the plant are also have also exploded, blown up. There are 10 sheriff's deputies who have been taken to the hospital for breathing those fumes. And the people that own the plant are concerned about a fire and a much bigger problem they already have in their hands. Meanwhile, in Beaumont, Texas, a decent-sized town, they have no water. And they've got water, but they don't have water they can drink. Both of the city's main water supplies are now not usable. They have been dysfunctional for a period of time, and they don't know how long it'll take to return them to function in Beaumont, Texas. So that continues, and Vice President Mike Pence will be in the area today. Next. U.S. District Judge Colleen Cottley of Washington tore into President Trump's voter commission for reneging on a promise to fully disclose public documents before a July 19th meeting, ordered the government to meet new transparency requirements, and elicited an apology from administration lawyers for stalling. I don't know if you heard, President Trump thought there were was it 3 million or 3 billion or 3 gazillion or 3 quintillion?
I think it was a gazillion.
Was it a gazillion?
Gazillion, yeah.
Fake votes that were out there. So that's still out there, tying up the courts. Isn't that special? Next. President Trump promised yesterday a large corporate tax cut and trims to individual income tax rates that would help the middle class. He can't deliver on that promise, but let's just make a note of it. He did make the promise. Thank you for that. Chicago Police Superintendent Andy Johnson's kidney transplant went very well. Successful surgery. So congratulations to him and his courageous son, the donor. Both are recovering well today. We'll keep you up to date on that story. New kind of advertising coming to National Football League games and other programming to Fox Sports this fall. A six-second television commercial. Fox Networks groups will offer the tiny commercial slots alongside its standard 15s and 30s for a variety of sporting events after testing the format on its broadcast of the Teen Choice Awards in mid-August. These would be the ADD spots.
Yes, they would.
Attention deficit disorder spots. Basically, 6 seconds, you have time for a logo to pop up and for someone to say hi.
But, you know, there's so much on these broadcasts. With the constant promos popping up on the screen for the next show coming
crawl
up
on the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know that people will notice. I think it'll sneak by you.
Well, a lot of you, and thank you for this, love traditional media like us. Mm-hmm. But I want you to know, if at all Northwestern games, Dave, I'll be standing over your shoulder screaming commercial content.
Oh, good. Okay.
And people can't see it right now, but there's logos spinning in the corner.
Yes, there are. Those aren't logos. And then there's this. Really hard to imagine. I remember staying up all night when this happened. Because it didn't seem real. And frankly, it doesn't seem real today. At the age of 36, Princess Diana died 20 years ago today. And if you've been watching any of the documentaries and really fine documentary work about her life that's been out, warts and all, over the past month and a half. Really exceptional. An amazing life, far too short. The legacy being her two sons and now her grandchildren. And really an amazing loss to the world. And it was 20 years ago today.
Was it a Saturday evening?
I don't think it was. I feel like it was a weeknight.
I don't remember.
I feel like it was a Friday evening into Saturday.
Is that right? Friday into Saturday? Yeah.
I think it was a weekend.
It was Friday. It was Friday into Saturday.
Yeah, I was laying in bed watching the news when it happened, and I could not sleep all night.
Do you only lay in bed on Friday nights?
I don't know. I'm boring. I don't watch. I don't remember. Well, it was late at night, wasn't it?
Friday night into Saturday. It's official.
One of the great mementos of my life is I'm actually in a picture with Princess Diana.
What?
Yeah, I was. When she came to Northwestern to visit Northwestern University, I was a reporter at another station, and I was standing there holding the microphone out to ask her a question, and she looked like she was answering my question but walking by, but I'm clearly right there in the picture next to her walking.
I've never met her.
Show us that.
Never met her. Love to see that picture.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was she as stunning in person as she appeared to be?
It was. I remember that day. It felt like, obviously royalty, but it was just she was so nice to everybody, stopping and talking to people as she walked through the Northwestern campus. And
this was on BBM?
Yes. Yeah. She was there. She visited Northwestern for the day and went to, a private home after she spoke on campus, I think. And
tried to meet with you, Dave?
No,
but she was at the president's residence, which is on campus.
I didn't think she'd be hanging with a freshman.
No, right. She wasn't at a kegger.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I mean, she, and she was wearing a purple dress.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Wow, nice touch.
Mm-hmm.
Nice touch.
Yeah, very nice.
Is it like the one Steve wore to work today?
A little.
You like it?
Top 6 at 6, brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men, and Ryan Burrow joins us next. One of the amazing things is Ryan Burrow joins us from Houston, Ryan, that I've seen over and over and over again in the past few days, is this Cajun Navy, these civilians who have come in from all over the Deep South to save people in the greater Houston area. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is, and they really kind of got their start in Katrina, and now the technology has gotten so much better that these guys who are essentially, you know, there's no Cajun Navy meeting. These guys just kind of go out and do things, and, you know, they fall under this umbrella. But there's an app called Zello, and it's a walkie-talkie app that's essentially like a citizen dispatch center, and all you have to do if you're in need of something is click on it, say, hey, I need bottled water for a nursing home. And someone will respond to it directly. And that's how the Cajun Navy's been able to kind of go about and do this and create this citizen brigade of rescuing people who maybe aren't in life-threatening need but still need to get out.
There was a guy this morning, super early on, I don't know, maybe CNN, I guess, who is sitting at his house in Arkansas. And, you know, he's a fisherman with a boat. And he and his buddy are watching this, and they just can't not do anything. And they get in a car and they drive to Houston. They drove as far as they could on the highway until it was flooded enough where they could drop the boat. They pulled their truck over to the side of the road. They dropped the boat and then took the boat in. And the first place they stopped was a nursing home. Nursing home filled with people who needed to get out. They got those folks out. A bunch of people jumped in their boat to help take care of the wheelchairs that were in their boat, so they could make sure that the wheelchairs weren't flying around. They got back. He said, I don't know who the people were holding the wheelchairs. They got out, got into another boat, went back to the staging area. All of these strangers getting together to help each other. I mean, it's what this country is about. It should make everybody feel good.
Sure. And you know, the interesting thing about that, too, is we're constantly in this business. We're trying to figure out numbers. OK, how many people were picked up? How many people, were transported? How many of this and that? And as far as these civilian ones go, they don't even know. I mean, they're so busy just doing it. They're not counting every time they do it. In fact, even the Coast Guard says we just count the number of times we make a rescue. It doesn't matter if there's one person we pick up or 13. It only counts as one. So to try to understand how many people have needed to be rescued, I don't think that's even possible. The other thing is, as far as the volunteers go, you know, people in Houston here who were not heavily impacted by the storm, they've got nothing to do. So they've been kind of sitting around and thinking about what to do over the last 4 days. The incredible outpouring of support. These people are going into Costco and buying up diapers by the cartload. They're buying up baby food. They're buying up dog food, and they're bringing them to shelters. They're trying to volunteer. They're saying, hey, I don't have work. I don't have school today. For the next few days, I'm gonna put my arms and legs to use and go to a shelter and try to work. And it's just been an incredible outpouring of support.
So you make an interesting point, because I think around the country and around the world, everybody who's not there thinks, well, the entire city's underwater, but that's not the case, right? There is some higher ground?
No, but the numbers we are getting, there is a potential for 100,000 homes to be damaged. But yeah, a lot of people, especially in the downtown area, seem to be okay. You know, the stores don't quite have as much food on the shelves as they used to, and there are security guards out there. But all in all, they seem to be doing fine. Some of them lost power for a little bit. But yeah, they might have a little bit of cabin fever. They want to get out and about and do some things. And, you know, sitting around 24/7 watching the news coverage, a lot of them are starting to put their energies toward helping out. In fact, at the Energy Center, which is just next to where the Texans play, it's a convention center. They opened up for a capacity of up to 10,000 evacuees. They've actually not turned volunteers away, but they're starting to rotate them in shifts. They had 200 people that showed up this morning to help out, and basically they're in a holding pattern right now waiting for their time to help.
Well, that's a good problem. Yeah,
I think that's by the site of the old Astrodome, too, because I think the Texan Stadium is right there. And then I was surprised, Ryan, that the Astros are going to play a doubleheader on Saturday. At Minute Maid Park. Are people going to be able to get around, to travel safely, and to get to the ballpark?
Well, the good news is it is dry, and it has been dry. So a lot of the water is receding in neighborhoods. A lot of the water is receding on the roadways, which has been one of the biggest problems. The issues that still remain are the reservoirs, which they thought would start to recede as well, but for some reason keep taking in water. Flood officials have never dealt with anything like this before, so they're not quite sure where this water is coming from, but those do seem to be slowly rising still. They are controlling some of the releases into the neighborhoods, but outside of those dammed areas and the bayou, it should be open for business. They're getting the airports back open and back to full schedule. So, maybe it would be realistic by Saturday that you can play a game.
And it'd be a nice break for folks, too.
Mentally, I'm sure they could use it.
And you guys saw about the football game, right? The Texans. Canceled. Yeah, that game was scrapped. Yeah.
All right, so is the local media up and running, radio stations and television stations?
Oh yeah, they've been working nonstop. In fact, the CBS affiliate here, they took in water. They took in water. I mean, they were shooting pictures. I mean, many of them had to go up to the second floor. It's been they've been working 24-hour shifts too, and they've been the ones out and about in these neighborhoods. It's been unbelievable.
Outside of the problems in Crosby and Beaumont, the other thing we've continued to hear about which you sort of referenced there is it the Barker Reservoir or the Barker Dam?
There's this Brazos River that needs to dump all this water into the Gulf of Mexico, and it's just, it's flooded out. I mean, there's nowhere for this water to go, so it's flooding out all these people that are kind of lined up alongside of it.
Yeah, there were homes built apparently at 100 or about 100 feet, 96 feet to 100 feet, thinking, well, the water's never going to get this high. And now they could be 6 feet under.
Yeah, it's bad, and they do have a tendency to flood. It is kind of from the local perspective, think Des Plaines River style, but this is it's far beyond anything anyone expected. So that they were not prepared for this, and there were some mandatory evacuations in that area.
So things are certainly improving in areas, but Houston's not out of the woods yet.
No, the recovery effort begins. This is the time when the fire department starts going in, knocking on doors, and making sure that that everyone is either A, out of the building, or B, the people who are still in are okay, and they mark C's on the building to say they've completed the search of that. They're going to start with the places that took 3 feet of water, and they're going to move on beyond that.
It's Ryan Burrow. Thank you, my friend.
Sounds good. Take care.
All day today, we're asking WGN Radio listeners to participate in our Day of Giving to benefit victims of Hurricane Harvey. You simply text Harvey to 90999. That'll be good for a $10 donation automatically. You don't have to do anything else, to the American Red Cross. You can also call 855-999-GIVE, standard message and data rate supply, and make a different donation that way. We thank you, of course, for your generosity. And the big story is next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Recovery will be tough, but I have seen the resilience of the American spirit firsthand all over this country.
We now have 14,000 National Guard deployed, 600 vehicles, 500 boats, and 100 helicopters.
Not just Houstonians in the shelters. I think what you will find with people from Houston, Harris County, we don't turn people away.
I couldn't imagine that this would be, that this would transpire. Could not imagine such an event transpiring.
I want to thank these guys for saving my life. Thank you.
Amazing, amazing stories coming out of Houston. as it continues. Keep an eye on Crawford, or I should say Crosby, and Beaumont this morning. Those are two major trouble spots. And as we discussed a few minutes ago, the Barker Reservoir. Chuck Todd, host of Meet the Press, the 1947 podcast, MTP Daily, joins us now. Good morning, Chuck. How are you?
Morning, Steve. I'm all right.
You know, the amount of money it's going to take to reestablish what's already been lost in Houston seems almost incalculable. Is that going to be the government's number one thing once we get past recovery?
I think it will. I think it will sort of overshadow and probably lead to a smoother Congress in September. That doesn't mean we'll have some fights later in the year, November and December. But I think given the power of the Texas delegation in Congress, you know, there's so many Texas Republicans are pretty high up in different places, truly controlling purse strings. Oh, I think September Harvey funding is going to basically be grease for the wheels in Congress. It's going to get a lot. It's going to help get a lot of stuff done. Debt ceiling, avoid a shutdown, things like that.
This Cajun Navy story is just absolutely remarkable, with citizens coming in from everywhere, dropping a boat on a highway and rolling in and saving lives. Most of these people will never know their names.
You know, there is something about the fact that it was literally the reverse, right, of what Houston did for New Orleans. You know, Houston became a second home for New Orleans, for people right. from Katrina, and now it is literally now Louisiana's paying them back. I mean, it's in that sense, it's just such a very American story. You know, there's something about it that's just very, it's the stuff that makes us all feel a little bit better. And to borrow a pun, it's what makes America great.
Speaking of the fearless leader, there's an interesting rub in the Mueller investigation this morning involving the New York Attorney General. How conspiratorial should we get with this? Is this as strategic as it appears to be?
I think there is some strategy going on here because the president has dropped multiple hints that he is more than willing to use the pardon. Okay. Well, Mueller realizes that suddenly, if that's the case, his ability to squeeze a Mike Flynn or others, squeeze witnesses who think, if I just hold strong, he'll pardon me. Suddenly the pardon only is about federal crime. So why does Mueller want to get the New York State Attorney General involved? Well, if he gets him involved, and they do have some jurisdiction because a lot of these potentially shady Russian transactions took place in New York, then suddenly, you know, Trump's pardon power doesn't extend down to state crimes. So this is about Mueller trying to regain a little bit of leverage.
Does that say anything about the speed of the investigation or not so much?
No, but there does seem to be. I am mildly surprised that he has already done grand jury interviews, which he has with at least somebody that was in that meeting with Donald Trump Jr. already. I do think he is on a end of the year timetable when it comes to getting all of the sort of the research part of the investigation over, all the interviews over, all that stuff. It does seem to be that it looks like he's trying to push a little faster on that.
Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan are still in the witness protection program, apparently. We haven't heard much from them. You know, Congress is scheduled to work, about a day and a half between now and the end of the year? So even if there was cooperation between Congress and the White House, how much realistically could get done?
I think only the stuff that you have to get done. The past, you know, keep the government open, raise the debt ceiling. I think you'll see Harvey aid. I think you will see some sort of bipartisan band-aid on healthcare insurance market. But it's not transformative things, and it's not reform. It's keeping the lights on type of thing. It's, you know, keeping it functioning, keeping government working, not necessarily doing big change. I mean, tax reform, it will be a miracle if he gets something beyond a small tax cut for business.
The infrastructure bill, which most argue could have been done out of the gate, maybe too far down the road, but does the problems in Houston shed light on that again? You know, I think about the great floods we had.
I hope so. You know, I had a, you know, I appreciate you being in radio. I appreciate the extra plug you gave to the podcast, because I did an interview this week with a a guy who sat on a commission in Houston after Hurricane Rita. And this was a guy who ran for mayor, he lost, but he wrote an op-ed in the New York Times this week basically saying, hey, the mayor made the right call not evacuating Houston. But in the podcast, we talk about the messed up infrastructure of Houston and the mistakes that were made and actually how they were trying, how they've been trying to fix them in the last 10 years. When they repave a road, they basically improve the drainage on that road. But they've only gotten about 20, you know, they were doing it as they went, as streets were scheduled to get repaved, they did it. And I wonder if this lesson of Houston, that you will get cities that basically make the ask, hey, you know, is there a 50-50 partnership here with this, with the federal? I think the opportunity is there. I just don't know if this administration ideologically believes in it. And that's where I think there's definitely going to be an opportunity. I just don't know if the ideology of this administration believes in doing it this way.
Well, you go back to 1992 here. The mayor's going to be in here next hour, and I'm going to ask him about it as well. And the amazing flood we had here when an underground tunnel wall collapsed and there were 250 million gallons of water underneath the city of Chicago that had nowhere to go. I would think pressure from New York and Chicago and major cities who saw what happened in Houston, that may move this along as well. But I don't know. Maybe not.
Look, I think the bigger problems, no offense to Chicago, I think the bigger problems are in the Southeast, though. You know, this is the speedy development of the Sun Belt that was done, and in Houston's case, with no zoning laws. By the way, that's a whole nother separate.
Right.
But yeah, I think we're all like, wow, no zoning at all in Houston. How about that? But there have been very loose development laws all over the Sun Belt. And so whether you're Phoenix, whether you're Atlanta, whether you're Orlando, whether you're Miami, whether you're Dallas, San Antonio, these places have exploded in population, and they've exploded beyond their infrastructure. Trust me, go to Austin and attempt to just get around town. I mean, they just have basic traffic and transportation issues because this isn't a case where the town is just bigger than the transportation ability. The point is, it's the Sun Belt cities that have these issues more than anything else. They developed too fast without a lot of planning.
Speaking of the Sun Belt, before I let you go, your Miami Dolphins have a new quarterback who looks a lot like a guy that used to play here. How are you feeling about that?
Well, you know that I'm really a Packers fan, buddy. So
yeah, well,
I have to say, no comment. I sort of feel bad piling on Jay Cutler. I do. Can I tell you something else? You want to read the best profile of a quarterback this week? Go read the ESPN profile of Aaron Rodgers. Very fascinating.
Is that right?
Aaron
All right,
Rodgers
cool.
On,
yeah.
Yeah,
thanks.
Aaron Rodgers on Kaepernick. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers on Kaepernick. Aaron Rodgers on a couple things. It's fascinating, but he...
he's an intense fella.
Yes, he is, but he's probably among the most intellectually curious quarterbacks we've seen go public in a long time. It's just interesting.
All right.
Worth your time.
Thanks for the heads up.
Bears fan.
1947. By the way, I should mention this. I never do. You're second string. Your B team does a great job. I love Katie Tour and all the folks that occasionally have to step in for you.
You know, Katie Tour's got a big book. Her book's coming out in 2 weeks, so you better be nice to her and you better plug her book, man.
I'm telling you, she's welcome here anytime. But that MSC,
I'll let her know.
That MSNBC lineup is stronger than ever.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, bud. All the best.
Appreciate it. Get it.
Including Nicole Wallace. Chuck knows this, but Pat, you and I are particular fans of Nicole Wallace.
Ah, love Nicole Wallace.
Yeah. So she love you?
I'm sure she does not know I exist, but I am a fan. I did talk to her at the convention. Very pleasant woman.
Didn't she? What'd she do for Bush?
No, she was the communications director for Sarah Palin.
And well, that's
if you
right.
read
She's
the book
the
or watch the movie, she ended up not right. voting for that's McCain right. after that's she got right. to know Sarah Palin. So that's how well that went.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she and Sarah Palin still aren't exchanging Christmas cards.
No, no. She's very good. She's very kind of level-headed Republican, but I think is one of the great analysts.
Eric Adelstein will join us in just a second. You and Eric have an announcement to make.
We do.
Congratulations. I never knew the two of you would be a couple, but good for you.
Eric's going to announce he's running for president here.
Is he really?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Eric Adelstein joins us from the road. Where are you allegedly today?
Allegedly, I'm in the great state of Maine.
And what's happening in Maine?
We are doing a governor's race up here. Attorney General is a woman named Janet Mills, who's done some great work on the opioid epidemic, among other things. And we're helping her get her campaign off the ground.
You'd be running there against the Republican governor, who is sort of a Maine version of the president, isn't he?
Yeah, he's actually term limited, although he casts a big shadow, so he won't be on the ballot again.
But, okay.
LePage is sort of the state version of Trump, who says whatever comes into his mind. He has the filter of a fourth grader and never saw someone weaker than himself even like to pick on.
It does sound like Trump. That sounds a lot. Sounds a
is that
lot
a commercial?
Like, sounds like a lot like Trump.
That's a bumper sticker, maybe. I don't know.
Pat Brady is here as well, and the two of you are doing something that I find very interesting, and not the least of which is because I'm hosting one of these. But what is it, and when is it?
Well, it was somewhat inspired by what we try to do here every Thursday. Eric and I have been doing Point Counterpoint since probably, I think, the 2010 election. I think we kind of independently but together came to the conclusion that maybe it's time to put together a public policy forum, which is nonpartisan or bipartisan, sponsored by two partisans, and my other associate Tracy Slatskin, who was a longtime news producer at WLS and WGN here in Chicago. So we're going to do the Lincoln Forum, which is a public policy forum we're going to do every month.
And now, people hear public policy forum and they start to doze off. So explain to them why this is different. It'll be entertaining.
Well, it's different because it's not the typical rubber chicken circuit where you sit around and a bunch of lobbyists try to get access to people of influence. What we want to do is have a true public policy forum, a discussion, I guess, in place of the word forum.
And maybe have some fun.
And have some fun on the issues of the day. And the fun part of it is we partnered with the Chicago Athletic Association, which I don't know if you've been down there, but it's a fantastic new. It's been totally rehabbed, and it's a great facility. So we're going to do it in the evening, so it's some fun. Have a drink, sit down, listen to some of the leading public policy people in the state, locally and in the country, and have a discussion. But so we're going to roll it out September 21st. Our first guest will be Sheriff Tom Dart, who's been on the cutting edge of a lot of criminal justice reforms, both here and nationally. Our second one,
the subject of some controversy, so you can answer the tough questions.
Sure, and he will, and that's the point. And it's going to be a fairly intimate setting. It'll be about 100 people. And the second event will be a media panel. And we're blessed here, and I think in Chicago, with having some really great political media. Rick Pearson from the Tribune will be on the panel, Marianne Ahern from Channel 5, and Mike Flannery. The only weak spot in our lineup is it's hosted by you. So Eric and I will pick that ball up.
Eric and Pat will be standing by. Eric, and if I go to the bullpen, will you rush in first?
Oh, for sure. I think the cool thing about this is we all know this in this moment we're running around. Everyone talks about politics, talks about what's going on. They sort of say, is there a way to do this where it's not a shout fest? Steve, I think you've led the way a little bit on this show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think our opportunity here is to hopefully expand that and make some sort of small contribution where we can bring interesting people together who may not always agree but not necessarily be disagreeable.
And I think
there's a hunger for people that want to be involved and have an interest in a better state and country.
And this is also an opportunity to fire people up about the process and to go, if you really want to beat things like gerrymandering, you got to get involved on both sides.
Yeah, and our third guest we're going to have in November is the guy that Eric's working with, Chris Kennedy. He's running for governor of the state of Illinois. So that's the panel we got, the first three we had.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and we anticipate, you know, every month, and we're trying to get something in December that's more holiday and fun.
Is this a reasonable ticket price? How much are we costing?
$33, but that 33, which is kind of a random number, includes the service fee to do it online, so it's $30 a ticket.
Oh, that's great.
Yep.
Well, that's great. And, Eric, you're all on board with this? I mean, you're in Maine. You know, I don't know, a lot can happen when you're out of town.
I'll be back tonight. So, yeah, I'm totally on board. I'm excited. I'm glad that Pat really took the initiative on this, and I'm excited to be part of it.
It's the Lincoln Forum. Where do you want to send people for information?
LincolnForum.org.
LincolnForum.org, and we hope we see you for any of those, if not all. I don't know the answer to this. Can you do a membership kind of thing? Can you do all of them?
Yeah, we will do memberships and sponsorships. Yeah,
okay.
We do. That'll,
right.
That'll be
so
on
there. So you can contact you guys through the
contact,
website?
Yeah, come to the website, and we look forward to it. We're really looking forward to Steve Cochran and October 10th.
I don't think you are, but I appreciate you saying it anyway. Good luck there. I know it's going to be wicked hard to beat the Republicans in Maine, but if anybody can do it, you can.
Thanks, Steve.
Have a good holiday weekend.
All right, see you there.
Thanks, Eric.
Eric Edelstein, live from Maine. Pat Brady here. Good for you, man. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, we think there's an appetite for it. And people are fed up with the screaming and yelling. I think they want to be engaged, but they don't want to come out of it feeling bad.
Chicago Athletic Association is the location, a great place for you to come over after work and get involved in the process.
Thank you.
So, again, information at lincolnforum.org. We'll take a break. Come back. News next, 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
716, the power of the media doing good stuff. CNN, MSNBC, and Fox have all been able to put families back together in Houston. And through social media, the Cajun Navy continues to work miracles as a bunch of self-described good old boys with boats show up, sail in. Boat in and rescue folks, bring them to higher ground, get them to hospitals or get them wherever they need to go back and get more. It's really an amazing story. And again, most of those people, we will never know their names. And they're just absolute heroes. Rick Pearson joins us now. Pat Brady is here in studio as well. Good morning, Mr. Pearson.
Good morning.
From your Chicago Tribune. You know, Pat, would it kill you? Get the paper. Get the paper.
I get the paper all the time. And okay. I just said, you know, Pearson's one of the best, if not one of the best political reporter in the country.
So the best.
The best.
The best political
reporter.
Okay, done it all.
What do you guys want?
Nothing.
What do you want? Okay, come on.
Nothing as far as you know.
nothing we can say on air.
Not yet.
And host of the Sunday Spin, you got a plug?
Yes, I've got downstate Republican Representative Avery Bourne. I've got Dan Montgomery, the head of the Illinois Federation of Teachers, and the University of Illinois' Chris Mooney, and we're going to be talking all about the school funding formula change bill that the governor will be signing into law this afternoon.
Well, why don't we start there then? What does the public need to know that maybe they don't quite know yet?
Well, one, when he signs it, there's going to be state money for schools, and that's probably the most preeminent thing. The only part of the only unsolved part of the puzzle for the state budget that was enacted over the governor's veto was the state money for schools. And while schools were going to open on time around the state, question was for how long, and now we have a state funding bill and a new formula that changes the way that state money flows to schools, giving priority to those schools that are located in poor property wealth districts, and also giving the Chicago schools a boost of about $450 million.
For a completely inept, installed legislature to be able to pull this off at any level, I'm not interested in throwing a parade for them, but I am pleasantly surprised.
Well, that's the power of the politics of schools. You know, we go through a two-year impasse where everything is basically not funded except for schools. And the fact of if schools were to open and then were forced to shut down because of a lack of state money, the political ire that had been raised would have been tremendous, both on the legislature and on the governor. And so that's how we end up, I think, at the place we're at today.
What are people telling you in regards to the governor's race being next year, being the mover in this, if that was a factor at all?
Well, certainly that would be a big factor. And frankly, it's a big factor for the legislature to act as well, because we have the entire House of Representatives up, and we have the governor's race. 2018 politics has, frankly, been dominating things for more than a year now. But it's kind of still a question here. The Democrats in the legislature had passed a school funding bill. The governor vetoed it. Senate overrode his veto. The House was not able to do so. And finally reaching a compromise on both sides with this bill. But it's still questionable. The governor came away from the table really with not much of the agenda that he wanted when he rewrote the bill. So that seems to be a fundamental question is, what actually did Republicans get out of this bill? There was kind of a consolation prize of a tuition tax credit for scholarships for private school students, $75 million tax credit program. But beyond that, there were minimal changes in some of the basic things the governor wanted. He wanted a property tax freeze. That's not part of the bill. There is a little bit of a small slice of that for school districts that have high property taxes and high property wealth. There's a way to reduce property taxes there. You wanted to eliminate state mandates, most state mandates from Springfield to local school districts to try to save them money. Those got pared back significantly. So in the end, for after more than a year, really, of hearing the governor say that things were this bill was a Chicago bailout, Chicago really ends up with more money than they did under the original Democratic plan.
And Pat Brady, what are the Republicans telling you they got out of this?
I think what they got is I think that Leader Durkin really was the one I think that orchestrated the deal, came out looking pretty good. But and Rick talked about the scholarships they're going to have for low-income kids. But, Rick, to me, the elephant still in the room and always will be is what are we going to do with these pensions that are driving to a great extent the deficits we're running?
Yeah, and, you know, as we know from the Illinois Supreme Court, there isn't a lot we can do about it. And, in fact, you know, a good chunk of the money going to CPS is for pensions, as well as the fact that the city has the ability now to raise at least another $120 million in property taxes to go towards pensions for teachers. But the state is now assuming a larger pickup of the pensions for Chicago teachers that was primarily funded by property taxes. Bottom line is there isn't a whole lot of options. There aren't a whole lot of options on the table when it comes to doing anything about pensions because of the way the Constitution is structured. And even if somebody were to try to change the Constitution, it's doubtful that you could go retroactively and try to make changes.
But don't you think that the teachers union, when they, in this instance, when they just went absolutely crazy on this tax break for low-income kids, or they wanted to call it vouchers, their reaction was just so over the top versus what they were actually going to get in this piece of legislation. Didn't that kind of show, I think, politically where they are? They're just, there's no compromise they'll accept?
Well, I there's no doubt that the teachers' unions pushed heavily against the compromise over that, the fear being that kind of the elephant's trunk is under the tent when it comes to more school privatization. But that having been said, you're seeing some very tempered responses overall about the fact that there is this new scholarship program. But that having been said, you have the Chicago Teachers Union, much more liberal. They're threatening a lawsuit, quite frankly, in looking at the legal history of this kind of a program. The program being that people could give money for a scholarship program that would help subsidize the tuition of lower-income students to attend private schools. They would get 75-cent tax credit for every dollar they gave. People saying, critics saying that this is a program mainly for the wealthy. You can give up to $1 million for this program and get a $750,000 tax credit. That's one of the complaints about it, that it would be steered primarily as a wealthy gift is the concern. Now, that having been said, overall, when you look at the fact of how this is the most dramatic change in the way the state funds money for schools in over two decades and finally uses an evidence-based model that tries to find accountability in how the dollars are being spent, you know, that's a very, very significant thing. But again, having said that, it's still kind of questionable what really the return was for the governor on this, because he had been pushing for a lot of his agenda items to go in relation with this and really ended up with very little.
First Word in Politics Sunday mornings is the Sunday Spin, hosted by Rick Pearson. Read him in the Chicago Tribune, online at chicagotribune.com. He also does birthday parties and bar mitzvahs and an occasional bris. but that's only people who argue with what he's writing.
I got to get the knife sharpener out.
Good to talk to you, man.
Thank you very much.
We'll hear you on the radio. Playing hurt, Rick Pearson taking one for the team at 7:24. Pat Brady's here. State Senate Republican leader Bill Brady is here. I don't know if they're related or not. It seems like all the downstate Bradys are related, but who am I to judge?
It's the family vine, Steve.
I'm waiting for the 23andMe results to come back. Mr. Brady, how are you?
Good to be with you, Pat. It's always good to be with you, Pat.
Good to see you, Senator.
Especially.
Apparently, almost only occasionally good to be with me. Bill.
Always.
So, Bill Brady, we were just talking a moment ago with Rick Pearson. The bill the governor will sign today relieves a lot of people, should it?
You said it relieves a lot of people?
Yeah, it gives a lot of people a relief of the tension and stress that they thought they'd be feeling.
Well, you know, the people it helps the most are the students of the state. And I don't, just to be corny, but this is a bill that I think moves Illinois to the forefront of our nation. It's been something we've been fighting for decades. It's something the governor wanted and initiated through his bipartisan commission. It helps every student in this state and some students in ways they would never get it and can't get that help in other states, particularly the private scholarships for students who wouldn't have the opportunity to have school choice for financial reasons.
So the stuff in the bill that you got versus the stuff you'd still like to get, what's not in there?
Well, we would like to have get, for instance, Chicago has third-party contracting. It has other forms of mandate relief and other things that we would have liked to have gotten for the rest of the state. Politically, that was very difficult for the Speaker and the President of the Senate because the unions don't like it. But Chicago has it. We would have liked to have gotten that. We would have liked a healthier discussion on the impact of tax increment financing districts. We're going to get that healthy discussion. We would have liked to realize that when school districts around the state are receiving resources from TIFs, that should count as their local amount. But there are things in this. But let me just say, as I said on the Senate floor, what every student needs and what every school district needs is in this bill. Not everything everybody wanted. And that's why this truly was probably, and maybe because I was so intimately involved with it, but truly was a bipartisan compromise. And I applaud the people on the governor's bipartisan commission for bringing it to the table. I applaud the Senate President, Jim Durkin, the Speaker of the House, for closing the deal. And I mostly applaud the governor for landing this plane in terms of bringing us to the point where we could come up with what I think not only is historic, but is at the forefront of this nation.
Pat, any thoughts for Bill Brady?
Hey, we kind of have an ear of good feeling going here now, Senator. Can this carry over into the other issues we need to deal with?
You know, I brought that up in a number of times with the Speaker and the President of the Senate and Jim Durkin and the Governor as we brought people together. I said, you know, we haven't collectively, the four caucuses and the governor, come together very often. And hopefully this is a trust-building exercise as well as a real success for the students of Illinois. I think it can, Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Brady. Get back to work, please.
Congratulations, Bill.
Right.
Big win for you guys. Great,
there you
great
go.
Stuff.
That's Bill Thanks. Brady, the Senate Republican leader. Mayor Emanuel coming in here in a little bit. We'll ask him about the school funding for the city. And also what's going on with the police department and oversight of the same. We'll get to the big story before we get to that. That's next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
7:43, we continue live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. It takes more than a day of giving, but let's start with that and get you focused. All day today, we're asking WGN listeners to participate in the Day of Giving to benefit victims of Hurricane Harvey. Text Harvey to 90999, and it's an automatic $10 donation. You can also give at 855-999-GIVE. And thank you for that. Mayor Rahm Emanuel is here. I want to talk to you about what's going on in Houston, infrastructure and things. But first off, let's get to that education bill the governor's signing today. Are you happy?
Yes, very happy. I'll take one little nugget out of it. We're going to be able to add 2,000 more kids to full-day pre-K. So we'll bring
it's
us
a big deal.
Yes.
Get them early.
And, you know, we started, when I became mayor, there were only half the kids were in full-day kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
We now have universal full-day kindergarten for every child, and now we're up to by 70% more kids in full-day pre-K. And you can see in the growth, Chicago leads the country in math gains and reading gains, both for 8th and 4th graders. And in that level, not only happy, but also financially. I mean, these are great academic gains. We've been operating under the cloud from finances. And for the first time, got to be honest, Chicago children and Chicago taxpayers are going to be treated like equal citizens here. And actually, the state of Illinois should actually be proud of what's being happening here in Chicago public schools.
Why can't the Republicans and Democrats get along downstate and get more done now?
Well,
is this an icebreaker or is it just a moment?
That's for the governor to decide, and I say that because you're the chief executive, you're the leader of the state. I think there's an opportunity to decide to see what a win-win looks like. There was a lot of demonization in Chicago, a lot of blaming, and I think that's the wrong way to approach solving a solution. As somebody who worked for two presidents, Congress, but also as mayor, you usually say, okay, what's important to you, and this is what's important to me. That's the basis. If you don't try to go to an agreement based on you have to lose for me to win, but – what do you need for this to be a decent agreement, an honest compromise? You can get a lot done. And I'll just tell you, as somebody who worked on a series of pieces of legislation for two presidents, but also as mayor, not everybody agrees with me, but you basically sit down and say, what do you need? Because I got to tell you what I need. And if you start with that level of trust, not demonize the person individually, calling them names, understand and appreciate what they need to get done, you can make things happen. So he has to decide, as the chief executive, the leader of the state, what's the approach going to be?
The Speaker of the House, and you may have missed this, but I actually congratulated him the other day.
And they
thought the transmitter would shut off.
But I think President Obama had it in a sense of his demeanor, et cetera. If you sit there and say to somebody and build a level of personal trust, even when you have philosophical differences. I mean, I sat across the table for President Clinton negotiating the balanced budget agreement.
Right.
They had basic views, and they weren't going to move from. But there were other things that I said, okay, this is not a, this is a B, and that's an A to you. I get it. That's what an honest compromise. If you have trust, you can get a lot done. You don't have trust, and you don't respect the other person, you'll have your policy differences. You're not going to get anything done.
Well, I've never seen a deal done where I get everything and you get nothing without payback coming down the road, and nobody wins in that
regard. Well, this goes back, but when you say you agree with the education, 90% of the education bill, 90%, but you're going to veto it, it's hard to start a conversation on that.
Yeah.
We're not going to have a debate about the last 10%.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, that's not exactly what he said, but.
No, it's not what he was
saying. And that's not what he was saying.
You know what Beth Purvis said? She said he agrees with 90% of the bill.
The deal is, in defense of the governor, whom I will defend because I think this is a big win for the state, for you, and for him, is the process in Springfield is so there's too much power centralized in one place. And I don't want to ruin the spirit of ear of good feeling, but it's a two-way street.
I know it lasted 2 minutes. It's out of the
system. Well, I know.
Let's go back to how we really
feel. We tried. No, I'm trying to put it in the kind. It is a two-way street. Yeah. And hopefully this is a sign that thawing has occurred, we get things done.
I totally agree with you. I think that there's an opportunity, but I also know this. If you're the chief executive, you set the tone. You're the only person that can hit the reset button. And this education, and that's what I said, go back to what I said when the bill was first being crafted. This is a historic opportunity for the governor to claim something that everybody for 25 years in this state claimed. Illinois was dead last in funding education. It was dead last in equity as it related to education for poor kids. And the education is their ticket out of poverty. You can be the governor that rewrote the future of Illinois. I actually believe the bill he signed today will do that. And rather than been a problem to that and a speed bump, he should have gotten in front of that parade. The fact is, we're here. And I'm most proud of the equity across the system because not only are we making gains against a headwind, that headwind becomes a tailwind for us. And important, and I know that Diana Rahn assures us, and when I was in college, I actually was studying to become an early childhood educator. The ability to make incredible investments, 2,000 more children now will get full day pre-K. We're going to have a lot of resources spent on the 0 to 3 years. That is a tremendous investment.
Well, that's
in
how you pay it forward. You pay it forward for the city and for the state. Get them young. Get them young. Give them a foundation for education.
It. Listen, I mean, we were just talking before. My middle one is leaving for college this week.
It's a big deal.
And if it wasn't for the time and energy and attention that Amy faced, it would have been a different trajectory.
Right.
We've seen our kids grow up, and I know. As the son of a pediatrician, I know you always. I know you thought I was going to say something else, but as the son of a pediatrician,
if the pause is any longer, I was going to fill it for you.
But that was the on-air FCC 5 second break. But the seriousness is just as somebody also who studied it and wanted to actually pursue a career in early childhood education. Those years 0 to 5 are irreplaceable.
Absolutely.
And if you lay that foundation, a lot of the future is
set.
Well,
the ultimate truth for you and for the governor, yeah. For anybody in a leadership position, is you pay me now or you pay me later. Mm-hmm. Take care of kids from 0 to 5, and you're not going to have to pay the bills later that you'll have to pay if you don't. But just to leave this for now, because we've got a lot of things we've got to get
sure.
to. But I do believe that we've got an opportunity here. This is more than a fork in the road. But the Speaker also needs to take this as an opportunity to move the House forward and compromise going forward as well in his own quiet way.
But look, I think once the governor accepted that there were some basic tenets for the Speaker, I don't want to speak for him, he can do that. But for the Democrats, then there can be an agreement. And that's why there was an agreement that was an honest compromise. And it allows Chicago, for the first time, our taxpayers will actually see their teachers' pensions and resources coming back, which has never happened before. It will also make sure that we don't lose money because we have poor kids. We'll actually get state support because it takes more to help kids of poverty out of poverty with a good education.
Right.
And that's a fundamental break with the precedent of the past funding in Illinois.
So Durkin, Cullerton, Brady, and Madigan, well done by the four of you. Infrastructure.
Yeah.
We're looking at Houston.
Yeah.
This is, you know, a nightmare what these people are going through every minute of every day. And, sure. You know, think back to the flood in 92. The retaining wall collapses. Under the city of Chicago, you have this massive flood. You hope to God this never happens to another big town, small town, anywhere. But what keeps you up at night when you look at what's going on at Houston?
If my radio station's left on WGN in the morning.
I'll bet. That'll keep you up.
I think, look, I'm leaving today. I mean, I'm leaving this show and at 11 o'clock or 10:30, we're going to cut the ribbon on the new Washington Wabash station. That's a state-of-the-art. By 2019, 40-some stations out of 140 will be totally new and rebuilt in the city of Chicago. Half the track will be new. You know what's happening in New York and D.C. on their mass transit system? Not happening here. We have an unprecedented $8.5 billion investment in our mass transit system. And I take it to work. It works, and it's efficient, and that's important for an economy. If you want a 21st century economy, you must have a 21st century transportation system. And if you don't invest in it, your economy, your city will come to a halt. And you can see glaring examples of that. Now, in this area of water, I'll actually be leaving in a week or so to Israel to be the keynote at a water conference and a green and water conference about conversion of brown water to green, safe drinking water, water conservation. And I want Chicago to be the nexus of research between Israeli universities and the city of Chicago, because we're all going to see that the type of investments in new technology around water conversion and water conservation are key to the future. In the same way that oil and energy was for the last 50 years, that's going to be true for the next 50 years of water. And how we treat Lake Michigan, how we treat the river, is going to be key to Chicago's economic vitality.
Well, you know D.C. politics better than just about anybody. The Congress doesn't have a lot of work days between now and the end of the year, and you have an epically unpopular president. Could you get infrastructure done between now and the end of the year? Because you're not going to get taxes done.
Well, the president just yesterday gave a speech on that. I don't think they're going to get it, because I don't think there's much to the president's plan. We've chosen a different course, not only on public transportation. We've chosen a different course on the way we're investing in our roads. I also think, and I would hope, and this is where I would actually go, Steve, take this moment of bipartisanship down in Springfield. We haven't had an investment in transportation and capital bill in over a decade.
The governor wants one.
Use this opportunity now and say, okay, what do you need? What are you willing to do? Because Illinois is in the dead center of the country. We're the inland port of America. If it runs on runways, rails, or roads, it comes in and out of the state of Illinois, right, Chicago, and say, I will lead and make sure we have an investment in 21st century transportation, which supports 15% of all the jobs in the state. It's a major effort for Chicago. And I think right now the biggest move, if I'm not advising the governor, but I would make transportation and a new capital bill, number one, because I'm also – I'll give you an example. I'll go close on this. He's going to do the signing at Ebinger Elementary School on the northwest side of Chicago. I was there.
The education funding bill?
I was there. It's a fabulous school. Serena, the principal, does an unbelievable job. We just made it a full international baccalaureate school and a $20 million investment in a modern new facility with computer labs, science labs, artistic center, new cafeteria,
sure.
About 15. That's what we need, is a capital bill for our roads, our schools. That invests in the future. You cannot have a strong future if you're not willing to invest.
Well, I also think you can't miss the messages. I mean, what's going on in Houston is a natural disaster, but it's a natural disaster that sheds a light on how poorly systems were in place in Houston. So what's it going to take? Another Minneapolis bridge collapse before we get the message?
Here's what I would say to the, the governor's not going to listen to me, but if he was, I would say, Washington's not going to come to our rescue.
Right.
You have a historic opportunity to hit the reset button. Put in investments in transportation as your reset button. And I think you'll find the Democrats, if you extend your hand, ready to grab it and shake it.
You're talking some fascinating.
Hold that thought, Pat. Hold that thought before Mike's head explodes in the booth. Stand by.
No,
one
can
second.
We watch that? No, no, no. Talk. I want to see that. That's kind of cool.
Stand by. Traffic and more with Pat Brady, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, and you guys on 720 WG. Mayor Rahm Emanuel is here, and I want to ask you about a couple of things. IBM has come out with their global cities list again, and the city deserves a congratulations and a pat on the back.
Yeah, this is IBM does a study of 100 cities globally. Chicago, 5 years in a row, is the number one city for direct foreign investment and in North America, and it's the only city in the United States on the top 15 worldwide, and that's 5 years in a row. There's a lot of confidence by worldwide investors in the city of Chicago today, tomorrow, and in the future. And that's it's not a one-year hit. It's 5 years in a row. And in fact, 2 years ago, when Chicago hit the list as number one, our direct foreign investment was greater than Atlanta, Montreal, and Miami combined.
Let's say that's a lot of good news.
And you can, from here, you can see across the river that Chinese investment, $1 billion.
Sure.
That's 1,200 people working, putting that building
100
up.
100 yards away with the Apple store, yeah, and the cranes. Anytime you go to a big city and you see cranes, that's a good sign.
I think in the next month, knock on wood, we are going to have permitted the most cranes in the last decade in the city.
That's great.
It's going to be north of 53.
I need you for one more second because I wanted to say a word that is the filthiest word in politics, taxes. And then Pat has been holding his breath since his question.
No, I just want to have the mayor back on my show so he'll take some more of my questions maybe next time to see if that's all right with you.
Pat,
mayor, you're always welcome on my show.
Yeah,
Pat's question coming up, maybe. Yeah. But first, news
hit the
next
pause
button. 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
1,000 shows coming up. We'll tell you about that celebration. I'm sure the mayor will probably want to throw a parade for us. Mayor Rahm Emanuel is here. This is show number 979. How's Eddie Johnson?
He's, as of last night when I talked, everything's good. I'm actually going to go see him this morning.
And his son did the donation,
yes,
of the kidney.
Yeah, I joked with Eddie beforehand. I said, you know, I checked. We're current on our Blue Cross Blue Shield, so this is good. Let's go.
right.
We're not a month behind. Go ahead. It's all good.
Your own personal health plan's just yeah, fine.
Your PPO?
Yeah.
We're current on. Don't worry about it.
He did a great job at getting in shape, listening to his doctor's orders, and doing the right thing. So we have every reason to believe he's going to be fine.
He has a personal goal, he said. Not only A, for the surgery, B, the other one is he wanted to – I run, you know, with the recruits.
Yeah, yeah.
I try to do every class. I don't hit everyone. He wants to go do the run with us. So
that's tremendous.
Yeah. I give him a lot of credit for the discipline. It takes a lot of credit.
All right. When I say taxes, you say what?
I say Cochran Show, WGN.
You're not going to hang that around my neck.
No, so here, you know, there have been some questions about the city as it relates to the schools and this effort that's in the bill. And I just want to be real clear about this. You know, we inherited, when I walked into the office, a financial mess at CPS.
Yep.
There was a 12-year hiatus on ever contributing to the teacher's pension by the city. And they asked for that, and it was wrong because they kicked the can down the road. There was a 70-plus year hiatus by the state never contributing to teachers' pensions like they do in the suburbs and downstate.
Right.
And since 83, the teachers basically took a hiatus. They only paid 2%, not the 9%.
And the math doesn't lie. Somebody's got to pay the bill.
Everybody kicks the can down the road. Guess what? Now, we averted that crisis. I'm up front. We not only now are securing our teachers' pension, which the Chicago teachers' pension is better funded than the state of Illinois' teachers' pension.
Right.
But we did it by asking everybody, teachers are going to have to pay more, their full share. The state's going to, which is part of this agreement, they're going to have to step up for the first time, treat teachers here and taxpayers here, just like the downstate. And the city will step up. I don't want to do it, but the fact of the matter is everybody, for different reasons, over the years, kicked the can down the road, played politics with pensions, and did it at the expense of not only taxpayers but teachers and also students. And we have to set it right now. Under my tenure on the corporate side, we eliminated the per-employee head tax. I happen to think in the right way we'll do certain revenues for investing in the future, like in infrastructure. But I've been very clear, not only as a per-employee, but on pensions. We will step up and do what politicians in the past never did, which is be honest and tell people what we got to do to fix this, to avert the crisis. Because if you don't fix it, you're going to get not only downgraded, it's going to cost you more money in the long term.
Pat Brady.
Mayor, if you were a flower, what color would you be?
This is why I didn't let you ask the question before.
You know, you flew all the way here to deliver the corn for that question. You know, I'm glad you have another career line.
No, I'm serious. What are we going to do about pensions, teacher pensions? It's got to be reformed or we're going to all be bankrupt.
Well, you know, I've negotiated. First of all, let me say this. For Chicago, all four pensions at the city level were upside down. We now have them on actuarial funding. We have an agreement with all the unions, police, fire, laborers, and the municipal employees. All of them are done. We have a revenue stream for all of them and have been recognized by the rating agencies for that.
So the question is that we're not going to go back to the well on a tax increase again. We've got this thing stable going forward in light of what you just said about the people that ignore it for decades.
But for the teachers, the same thing. But look, if you take a hiatus from the city level for a decade or more, the state for 70 years, teachers for 30-some-odd years, you're going to have a crisis. You got to pay into it. Now, I don't agree with the Supreme Court's decision in Illinois. I don't. I try to negotiate a different approach. They said no. Those are the rules because of the Constitution. And I think what you're going to have to do is everybody's going to have to step up, but everybody. You cannot. The employees are going to have to step up and be part of a new system and actually contribute to their own retirement, the full amount that it takes. That's also going to be true for the public as a whole in that effort.
But can you do it without a constitutional convention?
No. I mean, but you're never going to get that agreement if all you do is deal with public employees on that side.
Could they agree to something? Is there a deal if they could just
if you go
maybe
back,
that's dreaming, but would they agree to something?
You know, I don't mean to show you how strange I am, but if you go back to the actual debate during the Illinois Constitutional Convention in the 70s, they knew that what they were doing was basically sitting in a time bomb. That if you go back to the side letters from the pension board, et cetera, that what they were writing in the sense that you could not touch, could not reform, that the moment you became an employee from day one, you were guaranteed there was never a way to go back and do that.
So why set it up that way?
I wasn't around in the 70s.
No, but I'm saying you said weird, like you studied that like a political nerd. So you knew about it and researched it. What's your belief?
Look, everybody, part of a negotiation is you're negotiating the terms. And the notion that something is involatile, you cannot change it, is crazy.
It is crazy.
And so, but that's, you know, our court, Supreme Court, is reading our Constitution. Other states have similar constitutions. Their courts, their Supreme Court, read it much more liberal than ours. We're in Illinois. I have to abide by the law. I'm going to abide by the law. I tried a different approach, and to the union's credit, they tried to negotiate a different agreement, both the labor and municipal. Supreme Court said no. And they were willing to make changes to the terms, and they said no.
But even the terms on both sides added the 3% a year, some of the sweeteners.
Listen, what happened in the past 40 years, what was sweeteners, you get, 80% of your last 3 years, and people were getting their salaries bumped up. Those were things that were agreed to, and they just let somebody else pay the bill. They didn't want to face the political
And once they were agreed to, that was it. You can't move anything.
Yeah. And it's crazy.
Recognizing that it's a problem, what do you want the public to understand? Because by my mind, it has to be the ultimate, and that would be a constitutional convention, and that's the only way to change it.
Here's your focusing appropriate on pensions. I've said this when I first ran, and I'm proud of what we've done in Chicago. In our health care costs today in the city are basically the same as when I took office. We have done a very, and I said this, the city health care costs are rising at 10%, the third largest item. We were not getting revenue at 10%. It was unsustainable. We made changes with our partners in labor. They've been a party to those negotiations, and we have actually done a better job in controlling costs and also providing, I think, better health care. And I think that's a model of the right way to approach. It's also another benefit. And everybody's entitled to health care and retirement security, but they have to be a partner in making sure it's stable. And it's because there's not an ATM machine called the
taxpayers. So your point on a constitutional convention, that they're not going to accept the things to be shoved down their throat. It's better to negotiate something out versus doing a convention and take it or leave it.
Otherwise, it's just going to be wages are flat. You're not going to get it. You're going to just,
Well, that's why the union leaders, I feel like the union leaders have misled the rank and file because there's only so much money.
Here's my thing. This is why I left Washington. And this gets to a larger one-day philosophical discussion. Basically, D.C.'s retirement and health care benefit program with the Defense Department.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't watch it and, you know, don't do what we're right, I mean, I'm proud we're about to go make a big investment in education. We're going to make it open up a new L station, invest in the future. Those are the things. If you don't watch it, the city of Chicago, you know, or any municipality, the state of Illinois, will become a health care and retirement benefit association with a police department,
right,
and a fire department,
right.
And that's not, that means you don't have the resources for new libraries, new schools like we're doing at Imager, a new rail station in Washington. You have to have the resources to invest. That means working together to respect the work of public employees, but do it in a way that also respects the hard-earned dollars of taxpayers.
Mayor Rahm Emanuel, obviously, I appreciate your time, and please tell your wife, Amy, congratulations to both of you on sending another fine youngster off to college.
Yeah,
there may Brown be, University, and that I like Amy better than you, but
if you really cared, you may be getting us a box of Kleenex, man.
I understand.
this is going to be a rough one.
May run by Costco, get you the whole crate. thanks. Appreciate it as always.
Thank you.
It's 8:20, back after this on 720 WGN. Dean is on an airplane right now, headed back from Hollywood. And I was just looking through some show business news. Fans are upset after finding Bruce Springsteen tickets on StubHub as much as $7,000 over face value. Would you pay $7,000? How about eight?
Nine? Over face value?
Over face value.
So you're talking $9,000 plus, what, a couple hundred?
There are tickets for Springsteen in the first 10 rows. I can get you those for $10,000 a seat.
Do you get to go backstage or some kind of perk?
You get to marry Bruce.
Well, you have to.
Yes. $10,000 a ticket, and Springsteen is very careful about controlling the costs of his tickets so that the shows are still at least mildly accessible for fans. And that doesn't appear to be the case, at least right now.
Springsteen fans are crazy. We have a lot of friends, like at least 10 couples that have been to 30-plus Springsteen shows.
That was Ann Maxfield.
Yeah, Ann Maxfield loved it. She was constantly.
I've seen him twice, and twice is great. Yeah. It's great.
And if you sit in the front rows, he sweats a lot, too. He's a very
sweaty
guy.
But you can't guarantee he'll sweat on you. You got to get super close for that. I hugged him once.
Did you?
Yeah.
Why?
Man hug. We saw each other.
Did he hug you back?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was the three pats and break.
Oh, okay. I just captured you and our boss, Todd, bro hugging on our WGN Instagram story, if people want to go and look at it.
That'd be exciting video for you to check out this morning.
It is. It features the back of your head just because that's where I was standing when I took the video.
By the way, when
his best feature.
The CLTV people, when we do the show for the hour every day on CLTV, is their greatest challenge trying to light the studio while having the reflective problem in the back of my bald head?
Yes. Okay. And you're not wearing a hat today, so it's going to be all scalp.
If you're going to run an animated show, you've got to have the right people involved in all the key positions. And for the last 27 years, 27 of the 28 seasons, a man named Alf Clausen has been the Simpsons composer. He was fired yesterday.
I heard that.
I bet he's difficult.
After 27 years?
Yeah, they probably just got tired of it.
Clausen said he got a call from the producer explaining the program was looking for a different kind of music. He'd led a 35-piece orchestra which created the music for each episode. What are they looking for? Like house music? Electronic dance music? Punk? Little Kid Rock vibe? What are they looking for? I don't know how you fire a guy after 27 years. In my experience, you get fired much sooner than that.
I was going to say.
You think he'll leave?
Yeah. Well, again, that's the rule. When you get fired, I highly recommend you leave. It's really awkward if you keep coming in. So Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder are going to star in a romantic comedy together. Listen, anytime you get a chance to see Keanu Reeves work his magic as an actor, I think it's great.
No question.
We're in a hotel in Syracuse last weekend, and TV's on in the background, and Speed was on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, is that a terrible movie.
It's terrible. I'm not a big Sandra Bullock fan.
Really?
Either,
I love Speed.
I thought Speed's
How
a great
can you
movie.
Love Speed?
Go back. Go back.
Mary only likes it because there's traffic involved.
Yeah. Plus, it's so unbelievable.
Go back and sit through some of the lines in that movie without
going,
are
acting,
you kidding me?
The acting is not that great, isn't it? Keanu Reeves is like, oh boy.
I don't think Sandra Bullock's a good actress.
Oh, I think she is. She's not in that
movie. She is, but not in that one.
Yeah, not in that movie.
Especially when they go underneath the bus. It's like, seriously?
She's like a hippie kind of in it.
I thought the bus was great.
Yeah. The bus is very, very strong. The bus lasted until it runs into the plane. Yeah. Ooh, spoiler alert.
great.
You make sure this Thanks. Bus doesn't go under 50 miles per hour.
Honestly, is there a
Oscar award-winning acting, is there a worse
actor on the planet than Keanu Reeves? There cannot be.
No. Don't tell Nick DiGilio that. He loves Keanu.
Keanu Reeves is the Carson Daly of acting.
You better turn this bus around.
He doesn't smile very much.
And finally this, Hollywood is suffering from its worst attended box office season in 25 years. That's how bad the movies are. That's how busy you've been. That's how much the model has changed where you're all Netflixing it up at your house. 25 years since they've made less money in Hollywood.
Have you sat down on a Friday or Saturday and said, hey, let's go see a movie and taken a look on Fandango or whatever at what movies are around and then said, eh, maybe not?
Yeah, all the time. Right? Yeah, I used to go to at least a couple of movies a month. Now it's more like one every three, one every six.
I hate going to the movies because I have to wear makeup and jeans.
Same thing for me.
Why?
Those are the two reasons I hate going to the movies.
If you're gonna, it's like see people. I don't like, I like to watch it at home. No makeup,
eat the good
in pajamas.
Popcorn.
I make amazing popcorn. I make it on the stove, you know, like.
By the way, AMC Sandberg now open.
Yeah. And I don't have to listen to other people chew in
my
house.
Yeah, but you have dots?
We always have candy. Oh. I have kids.
That's true. So.
And do you overcharge?
I do overcharge.
Okay,
yes.
Good. Excellent.
But you can pause for bathroom breaks. Pat's bladder isn't built for the movie theater.
Listen, nobody
sure,
told
he's happy. Listen, you just nobody, told everyone that.
Nobody told you to marry an old guy. It's 8:30. Back after this on 720 WGN.
An animal!
Dan Hampton. Anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal!
It's time for Dan Hampton.
The Hall of Famer. Watching your Chicago Bears. And we'll play tonight with Mitchell Trubisky. Getting the football, getting the start. The right-hander goes for the Bears. Mr. Hampton joins us now. Hey, Dan.
Good morning, and you are exactly correct. We will we'll take a little bit more of a look at the young first-round draft pick. He's thus far, he's, you know, I don't know exactly who to credit, and you talk to different people, but when they drafted this kid, they had a certain, you know, image of where he would be, say, September 1st. Well, he's far exceeded that, and, you know, we'll just see if he can keep pushing, because thus far, he's played so well and make a blind man take a second look, you know?
Yeah, in a third, maybe. Here's the thing I'd be curious about, though, Hamp. You know, your third game, maybe you don't have the A team out there in all the key positions for a period of time. Do we run the risk of him ending up on his backside a lot and therefore maybe injured if the wrong O-line guys are protecting him?
Absolutely not. Most of the quarterback injuries occurred during certain dynamics in a football game. Most of the time, that's when they're down and the defense is coming and there's press coverage and you got to hold the ball. He's not going to do that. Dow Loggins has, you got to, again, like I said, Dave Ragone, the quarterback coach, Mark Sanchez, Dow Loggins, somebody's done an amazing job of getting this kid ready and prepping him for what he will have to deal with during the course of these preseason games. And again, we didn't see this the first 10, 12, 15 days of training camp. It's really come during the preseason games. And essentially that's what they're all about. That's where you want to see. You know, you can look great in practice, but if you can't bring it to the games, well, he has. Well, that's what we're going to see tonight. And we're going to see Dow get him on the move, get him, you know, naked bootlegs, tight end throwbacks, you know, dash plays, all these different things that he's got a skill set that's perfectly suited for. And when he's on the move, it'll be hard for anyone to get a good shot at him. So he'll probably play the first three, four, five series. Who knows? You never know. But you can never give a young quarterback enough reps because you can't simulate game conditions in practice anymore. So it's important that he does play.
Hamp, a prediction. All right, it's the last day of August. We're not going to hold you to this. Yeah, yes, we are. At some point this season, will we see Mitchell Trubisky start a regular season game for the Bears?
Or will it be injury dependent as opposed to performance?
Yeah, but that's a good add-on, too.
Either way, he becomes a starter well before Halloween. And the reason is, you know, I don't know how to express this. You know, there's an old maxim. If somebody is so good, well, why was he available, right? Well,
right.
Mike Glennon sat on the bench. And remember, he played well enough to get Tampa Bay the very first pick in the draft. So it's not like we've got Peyton Manning, you know, ahead of him. And we hope Mike Glennon does well. And, yes, John Fox foolishly made a promise and said, this is your year, this is your season. And if he hadn't have said that, then I don't think we'd be talking about who's the starter. Trubisky has outplayed him in every game thus far. And he hasn't, like as you mentioned, Steve, he hasn't had the good players around him. But all that being said, whether it's by injury or just poor performance, I think we're going to see him in September, if not surely by Halloween. Because, again, I was talking to some folks the other day, and I said, you know, and I'm not saying, oh, he's the second coming of Aaron Rodgers, but he's got the same kind of skill set. I mean, he's the same size. He moves better. You know, he's got a hell of an arm. He makes quick decisions. What's not to like? And at some point, like I said on Fox the other day, okay, Fox made a promise, but at what price? At what cost? Do you save face by keeping your promise but losing the team, by losing the season? There's a point where the groundswell will be, we hope Glennon goes 4-0. It won't happen, but if he does, then, you know, Trubisky will watch. But, you know, we've got Murders Row coming up. I mean, we've got
it's a tough schedule. Atlanta, it's a really tough schedule.
Back home against Pittsburgh and Green Bay. I mean, all four of those teams will be playoff teams. So, I think we're gonna have a mighty cry for the backup quarterback, the favorite player on the team. It won't take very long. Let's put it that way.
There used to be two roster cuts. So you would whittle the roster down. Then you would have the final cut down to 53 this weekend. Now there's just one. I mean, they're cutting the roster all the way down to 53. People looked at Sunday as, well, that's the all-important third game because the starters play. And then it's the meaningless fourth game because none of the regulars play. That said, does Ryan Pace already have a pretty good idea of who they're going to keep and who they're going to cut this weekend? Or is this game vitally important in terms of making those final crucial roster decisions?
Well, I believe 50 of the roster spots have already been claimed.
Wow.
Now we've got 5 or 6 or 8, maybe, depending on injury and how they want to, you know, proceed with that. But yeah, this is the very first year they've done this. This one slash and cut 30, 40 players at one time, and it's going to be fascinating. You know, we need receiver talent. You know, we're going into the season with Kevin White and Kendall Wright as starters. They would be probably number 4 and 5s on most teams. Not great teams, but most teams. Guys like Julio Cruz, Tanner Gentry, Marcus Wheaton, Reuben Randall, all these other, Deontay Thompson. There's a bunch of names that are still undecided about whether or not they're going to be a part of this team. And we'll find out exactly, those last spots tonight, because not only in performance with the offensive defense, but in special teams. And like I said, it's going to be fascinating. And guys like Jeremy Langford will probably be cut, even though he was a starter here just 2 years ago. So we're going to find out a lot. And I think it does make this fourth preseason game more interesting.
Are we going to have to send out for an extra Turk if everybody's getting fired on the same day?
Yeah, somebody's arm's going to be, you know, tied from the cutting. I'll never forget. And you know, I lived a blessed life. I never had to worry about getting cut. But I mean, you could tell, you know, the guy's mood and almost like a panic would set in.
Yeah.
Before it happens, because guess what? You know, and guys like Tom Waddle and Glenn Kozlowski, they tell me all the time, you know, I said, I love Dick, and they go, I love him too, but he cut me 7 times. How much can I love him, right?
Well, the guys know they're on the bubble? The guys that are on the bubble, do they know on the bubble, or are there some guys in denial?
No, you have all kinds. I remember we had a running back from Texas Tech. I can't remember his name. But, oh, he thought he was the second coming, and they cut him the first cut, and to see his face, it was just, I hate to say priceless, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, certain players, you know people that they think overconfidence is a forte in life, and it, every once in a while, you know, they get a little bit of a comeuppance.
It's tonight. The Bears will get the Browns in the last game of the season in an eminently winnable game, if you believe Browns preseason predictions. But you look at the Bears' schedule for the regular season. Outside of the Browns and 49ers games, there's not a single easy game in the other 14.
And the 49ers look a little better, too.
Potentially, yeah.
Well, guys, and I'll tell you this, and I know next week is the opener, and we'll start talking about season wins and all that. I feel a lot differently than I did when we started talking 3-4 weeks ago. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, last year, and you could go back and listen to the tapes, OB and I were outraged that John Fox did such a horrible job of preparing his team for the regular season, especially in the offensive line, especially with the refs, with the receivers and Jay Cutler. And, well, they corrected a lot of the issues. They've got better players, especially on the defensive side of the ball. The offensive line still got some flux because we don't know what's going on with Kyle Long. And I'll just tell you this, his ankle has got to be a lot worse than anybody wants to admit for him not to have played any up to this point. I mean, no player can go out there with zero practice and be able to perform. And, hey, the opener is, what, 8-9 days. So, anyway, but there's a lot of reasons. The one thing, and don't be shocked if on Monday, on cutdown day, we don't sign 2, 3, 4 receivers and maybe even make a trade over the weekend, depending on how everything falls. But if we did, you know, a decent job of trying to shore up and upgrade the receiver position, then you're talking about a team that, you know, I don't know if we can beat everybody, but we sure as heck could annoy a lot of them. And, hey, it's a lot better than what we saw the last 2 years where we just get blown out. So,
yeah, there's a lot of there's potential for upside here. When you're expected to have a rough year, mm-hmm. there's potential to look like heroes. By the way, was it Anthony Hutchison from Texas Tech?
That was it. Yeah, from Texas Tech. And, oh, my gosh. He was wondering why they wouldn't play him instead of Walter. That's how delusional this guy was.
All right, Amp. Tonight is going to be interesting, to say the least. So let's wish for good health for all the Bears and Trubisky to at least put on a good show. And maybe even a little better than that tonight. And Amp's watching it for you.
Yeah, we'll be spectators in our own fate. We'll see what happens. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, buddy. Well, sponsored as always by Chevy.
We're better than annoying.
.com. That's a great line, though, isn't it?
It is.
We may not beat many people, but we're going to annoy them. .com. 9:12 on Sale TV and on 720 WGN. Steve Cochran Show continues from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is show number 979. Happy to welcome to the studio Scott Rochelle, all 6 feet six of him. Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
Nice to meet you.
Likewise. Good to be here.
You worried about the Bulls, by the way, before we get into the topic?
I think everybody in Chicago is a little worried about the Bulls.
You know, there was one of the ranking services came out this week and said, yeah, it's going to be rough.
Yeah.
Said the Bulls may be the last in the league this year.
Well,
but you got to rebuild.
It can't be that bad.
Got to rebuild.
Right. Won't be that bad, though.
When did you know that you were not going to have a 20-year MBA career and you better get your law degree?
I would say my freshman year in college. I came to college to play basketball, and I was all of 6'6". I get to...
And a high school star.
Yeah, well, I was okay in high school, but I was a 6'6" center.
Yeah,
and that, you know, that made sense when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And I get to college, and the shooting guard is 6'10". that was about it. That was about it.
Yeah, so that's not going to work out for him.
Not at all. I got to practice, and I'm running drills with the guards, and I'm coming around screens, and they pass me the ball, and they say, shoot it. I said, I can't shoot. I'm tired. I can't do anything right,
right.
now.
Give me a break here. Let me catch my breath.
Exactly.
You became a lawyer, and you became part of the NBA Retired Players Association,
yes.
Started by guys like Dave DeBuscher and Oscar Robinson, and who am I missing?
Oh, you got Archie Clark, Dave Bing, Dave Cowens.
Yeah, that's a pretty good group.
Very good group.
All right, so what do you guys do when you go to work every day? What are you trying to accomplish?
We have a two-pronged mission. The first mission is to really get the players who are leaving the game to transition well, and those who have already transitioned to maintain their lifestyle, their careers, to build their careers, to build their education. If the guys haven't finished school, we help them through that. And then the next prong of the mission is to help the community, to get our guys back into the communities they came from to really have a positive impact.
Yeah, because you think about it, most NBA careers are how long?
I think the average is about 3 years.
So you're probably going to be looking for work in your late 20s.
Yes.
You better be prepared.
Yes.
And you've been playing ball your whole life and been told you're the man.
Right.
You're probably not thinking about, what do I have to do after basketball?
Well, you know, it takes so much to get to that level that there isn't really a lot of time to develop other skills.
Right.
To finish a degree, how many players are going 4 years now? If they're going to play pro ball, they'll come out when the time is right. And so the guys have to go back to finish their degree in order to get a career to get the jobs. And so that's where we come in. We offer free degree completion programs. We have a scholarship program. We gave away $250,000 last month to players, their kids, their grandkids, and spouses through our Dave DeBuscher Scholarship Program. So, I mean, we're really doubling down on the education front, because without education, you can't have the career you want.
And helping figure out how to make sure these guys figure out how to live their lives. You know, the college piece of this, Dave,
mm-hmm.
Dave does Northwestern basketball, as you know.
Right.
And the college piece of this is a big deal. Do you ever see it going back to a... Maybe you got to finish your sophomore, your junior year in college before they let them go to the draft?
I mean, I don't think that's going to happen to you, Scott. I mean,
you know, there are people in the NBA who would like to see guys stay a little longer. You know, and the Players Association has said, no, we want our guys to get an opportunity to play as soon as possible. You know, it's going to be collectively bargained at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know there are forces on each side who are really pushing for it. And you can see both sides of it.
Well, your organization is a nice model, based in Chicago, by the way,
yes.
A nice model for other sports. You know, Mike Ditka has tried to get health care for retired NFL players, and he's run into roadblocks a lot, and a lot of it's had to be privately funded. But you're getting a lot of kick in from guys in the league now, right?
Oh, for sure. So the NBPA, the Players Association, last year in their collective bargaining decided that they were going to take care of former players, because there's one reality is true. Everyone who's playing right now is a retired player.
Yeah.
They're just not playing yet.
Yeah.
And so these guys had the foresight to put together a program where every player who's played at least 3 years in the NBA gets free health care for life. And
that's
so and it's a tiered program, so that if you played 6 years, your spouse is included, 10 years, you and your family.
Right.
And until your kids are 25 years old.
Right.
And I mean, there's no other pro sport that does that. I mean, I know that
there's no other health care program like that.
No. So in with the TV rights deal the NBA has brokered, there's enough money there to fund it. And so we're very thankful for what the you know, LeBron, Chris Paul, and those guys at the PA have done to take care of the former guys, because this is tremendous. This is a game changer for us. And I know that our colleagues in NFL and MLB are very jealous.
Well, there was – I remember Dave – you know, Dave and I are old enough to remember things.
Barely.
I remember I think it was late 80s, early 90s. There was a study in baseball, and they went back to the guys who were the guys coming up in the game, and they asked them about guys, you know, from our youth, or guys that even preceded us. And the majority of the players in the league, sure, they had heard of Babe Ruth, but they didn't know Mickey Mantle. Mm-hmm. They didn't know Ted Williams. They didn't know the guys in the 60s. And most amazingly, they didn't know Curt Flood. And Kurt Flood was a guy who, because of the reserve clause, changed the way everybody got paid. And I would argue the guys in the NBA, the guys in the NFL, yep. the guys in the NHL. Without Kurt Flood, none of that happened because he opened the doors to all of it.
Correct.
So do you help educate the younger players, too, on the legacy of the game?
For sure. I mean, we have the task of being the storytellers. Perfect example is this. Spencer Haywood, who's on our board sure. of directors, Hall of Famer. 99% of the players who are in the NBA right now have come in under the Spencer Haywood rule. When he sued to be able to come in to join the NBA after 1 year of college.
Right.
If those guys don't know that, then you know it's a shame. And so what we've been helping, and Spencer put a movie out last year, and Spencer's been doing a great job of telling the story because these guys, they need to know the history.
Right.
You know, Oscar Robertson fought for free agency. So all these things that these guys are taking advantage of now and prospering, they started with the legends of basketball. When you think of who
it's
really
paved the
way.
You're living the life you're living.
Exactly. And so, you know, our slogan is we made this game. And it's there for a reason, because the game that you see today exists because of the sacrifices of those who are part of our founding fathers.
Sure.
But, Scott, do those former players look at the money through this new TV deal and the free agent exodus we've seen on the part of a lot of big names, superstars, and these huge contracts now, is there any sense of bitterness? Is there any sense of, man, did we ever, I mean, obviously they timed it, they can't help the timing of it, but right. seeing what's happening now.
To be realistic, of course, there are guys who are watching now saying, wow, I wish I would have been born at this day and age.
It's just human nature.
Yeah, I'm better than those guys now, and I didn't make this kind of money. The best we can do right now is to make sure the guys who are playing and making this money take care of the guys who really paved the way.
Sure.
And right now we couldn't be happier with where we are with healthcare. We do a nationwide cardiac screening in partnership with the NBPA. We did one a couple weeks ago in Cabo San Lucas at our annual conference, where we had a team of doctors on site and they did full workups on all the guys. I mean, EKG, cardiograms, everything. To make sure that when the guy left, he had a flash drive with all of his vitals and everything he needed to take back to his doctor. And if he's under
a big deal.
Yeah, and if he's under the PA's health program, takes it to his doctor. If he needs surgery, then it's covered. And we've had at least a handful of guys call us and say, hey, I just got a surgery because during this screening, we found something that I never would have seen.
That should make you feel good.
You know, a couple years ago, you know, we lost quite a few players. We lost Daryl Dawkins and Moses Malone. It was heart disease. So everyone kicked in the gear and figured out we need to take care of this. We need to start looking after our guys. And so, yes, as much as the players would love to make the money they're making, I think they really appreciate the investment that the current players have made into their health.
Having said that, how great what a moment was that when Bill Russell, was it at the ESPYs this year? When Bill Russell was surrounded by guys like Larry Bird and Magic and other guys, points at all of them and goes, I could kick all of your asses right now. But you love that. And it's got to be great for you hanging around with some of these legends of the games and just listening to them tell the stories.
The stories are the best. If you get a chance to sit with these guys, I mean, they're all competitors. Sure. So they'll still, and what Bill Russell said, I hear all the time, I'm still better than you. I was better than you. I dropped 20 points on you. They remember their stats from 30 years ago.
Well, you look at Michael. Michael had 50. Was ready to go back and play again, right? And who would have got, by the way, who would have bet against him if he decided to actually go and do it?
No one in Chicago.
Yeah, amen to that. Well, I salute the work you're doing. I think it's important. I think it's great that you're doing it for guys, because once the lights go out in the gym and people go home, they got to live a life.
Exactly. And the transition is tough for them. It is.
Yeah. Not everybody has your academic ability, so it's good that you're leading the way.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah. You got any game left, by the way?
Always. It's like riding a bike.
Yeah, you shoot around a little bit.
I won't ride as fast, but I love the game. I don't play as much as I like to, but you know, once you've played and it's in you. So we have guys who are 75 years old who still play every day.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I kind of think there are a lot of guys who would like to maybe take a shot at LeVar Ball on the court.
Off the court.
Yeah, either one. I didn't want to go there, but yeah, at least on the court.
The toughest person in the LeVar Ball story is LeVar Ball's kid, right? He's the one that's got to keep answering for dad. Yeah. But that guy looks like he's got some game. You worry about the current NBA?
No.
Because I do at times, and I'll tell you why. Because I see too much 3 points and free throws, and it's not as watchable as it felt a few years ago. I don't know how you change that, because you got unbelievable athletes who can throw up threes from anywhere, and the rules of the game are subject to you're going to get a lot of fouls at the end of the game. So. Yeah.
just like to see a few more fundamentals like you get in, well, frankly, like you get in the WNBA.
Well, you know, the NBA has invested heavily in their junior NBA program, which is grassroots technical basketball.
Yeah.
It's teaching the fundamentals at a very early age. We're involved with it from the NBRPA standpoint through our full court press program. We do a 20-city tour where we do a full day of basketball, leadership, mentoring. And so with our partnership with the NBA, the on-court curriculum is a junior NBA curriculum. So five of our former players are teaching basketball fundamentals for that day
The
kids. So the NBA sees, I think the NBA sees what you see.
Yeah.
And they've just really invested into making sure that the game maintains its integrity and the kids coming up do know the fundamentals.
Yeah, you don't want to turn it into a video game. You want it to be.
No, exactly.
Yeah. And last thing, I mentioned the WNBA, which I think has now been, if they had, is it 20 years?
20 years.
21 this year.
20 years. So you've got some ladies who played in the early days of that are going to need help as well. Are you guys involved in that?
Yes. The WNBA is as much a part of our association as the NBA.
That's great.
Yeah. We have a growing WNBA membership. Nancy Lieberman is on our board of directors. We had an inaugural class of Cheryl Swoops, you know, Dawn Staley. We have a great group of women who are working with us right now. Oh, and, you good. Know, one of the women working in our office, Barbara Ferris, she's been in our office and here in Chicago working with us through a player internship. And, you know, the way her outreach works and the things that she's done for the players and other people, it's been tremendous because when you think of the NBRPA, you think of just the man in the NBA. But sure. It's a family. It is a basketball family, and we're really promoting that to make sure that everyone who's played the game knows that this is a home for them.
Well, let's hope the Bulls are able to roll it out and stay competitive this year.
Let's hope.
By the way, legendsofbasketball.com for people that want to know more about you guys. Is that the best place to go?
That is correct. The social media is at NBA Alumni.
Nice to see you, man.
Likewise.
Thanks
for being
here.
The
work you're doing. Good for you.
Thank you very much.
Is part of Donald Trump's problem his likability or his lack thereof? Here's President Trump talking about tax reform yesterday. Listen.
Tax reform must dramatically simplify the tax code, eliminate special interest loopholes. And I'm speaking against myself when I do this, I have to tell you. And I might be speaking against Mr. Cook, and we're both okay with it. Is that right? It's crazy. We're speaking, maybe we shouldn't be doing this, you know? But we're doing the right thing.
We're a couple of rich guys. What am I talking about here? What am I, crazy? I'm Donald Trump. I'm the president, kind of. And Claire McCaskill, the senator from Missouri, a Democrat, he's in Missouri yesterday, and, well, he's not a big Claire McCaskill fan.
We don't get tax cuts and reform approved. Potentially the biggest ever. We're looking for the biggest ever. So we must, we have no choice, we must lower our taxes. And your senator, Claire McCaskill, she must do this for you. And if she doesn't do it for you, you have to vote her out of office. She's got to make that commitment. She's got to make that commitment.
So close. So close to just a regular political statement. The reason I bring all this up likability-wise in the midst of this week is there's a new poll out. Dave, it's a Fox News poll.
Mm-hmm.
Fox News.
Okay.
Fox News, Dave.
Fox News.
This is the Republican channel.
Right.
These are the people that are the core Trump supporters.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the story. The majority of voters surveyed in a Fox News poll say President Trump is tearing the country apart. According to the poll, 56% of voters think Trump is tearing the country apart. 33% say, no, he's drawing it together. The poll is conducted with registered voters, 64% of which surveyed said they are deeply dissatisfied with the way things are going in the country. 35% say satisfied. In April, 45% were satisfied, so 10% down over the summer. Well, 53% said they were not then. That's 15% up from the summer. Trump's job approval ratings in the Fox News poll have also dipped since April. 55% now disapprove of the work he's doing. 40% approve. Only 48% disapproved back in April. The poll also highlights differences between Trump voters and those who voted for Hillary Clinton last fall. 80% of Clinton voters believe white supremacists pose a larger threat to the U.S. than the media does. 75% of Trump voters believe the opposite. I find it hard to believe that you could come up with 75% of Republicans who said the media is a bigger threat than white supremacists.
Yeah, I don't that
doesn't add up.
No.
It's very odd. 92% of his supporters said that they would that Trump would finish his term. 29% of the Clinton's voters said he would not. I don't think there's any question he won't finish his term. I would ask the question, will he finish the year?
You got to make that commitment.
I've said this since day one.
Yeah, and you were asking some of us that in the hall yesterday. Yes.
He will not finish this year. He will resign before the year is over. Fox News says it conducted the poll with 1,006 randomly chosen voters across the country. You can Google it if you like. A Fox News poll with deeply negative trends about the president. Yeah, it's not a good sign, Donnie. Back after this on 720 WGN.
Who the hell knows?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Express yourself. Express yourself.
944.
You don't never need help.
On CLTV and on 720 WGN. Cool thing about this 9 o'clock hour, aside from the CLTV piece, we get a chance to meet some amazing people doing amazing things, and one in studio right now. His name is Will Geiger. Will, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Thanks for being over here.
Thanks for having me.
What do you do, before we tell people what you do, what do you do when you're not doing that? Your regular life?
What's my regular life?
What's your job?
I work for a small financial consulting firm, Railroad Financial Corporation.
So would you call that a desk job?
Yes, it's more of a desk job.
You've done 5 Ironman triathlons?
Yes, I have.
About to do your 6, special circumstances.
Yes.
How's a guy that does 5 triathlons tie himself to a desk all day? You must lose your mind at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
He ties the desk on his back.
Right, exactly.
I bet he has a standing desk.
I do.
Ha-ha, I knew it.
Yeah, standing leaping. So, when did you do your first Ironman?
I did my first Ironman in 2010, March of 2010.
Obviously, you're a guy that's in shape. You've been doing this for a long time. Do you do the mini tries to build up to that?
Yes. The first thing I did was a sprint try.
And explain the difference in distances.
It's kind of like different distances in running. You've got a 5K, a 10K, half marathon, full marathon. Sprint triathlons are kind of like the equivalent to 5K. Then you've got Olympic distances. Half Ironman and then a full Ironman.
I believe it's addictive, right? That's the only way you could get to do an Ironman is you must be addicted.
Yeah, it's kind of sick.
So when you did your first Ironman, where was it?
It was in Lake Taupo, New Zealand.
In New Zealand?
Yes, it was.
Why there?
Because when I first did one, I didn't know if I was going to be one and done, so I thought I'd do it in a place that I'd always wanted to travel.
Okay. So you wanted to combine the two?
Yes.
Is the key in that first one just proving to yourself you can complete it?
Pretty much.
And did you?
I did.
It's got to be an incredible feeling.
It was very fulfilling, and I had my whole family there and raised some money for the Cystic Fibrosis Association of New Zealand and was buddied up with a boy with CF from Auckland.
Now, at the point that you finish, do you think I've got to do this again, or does that come later?
And that one, I had to do it again. I knew right as I finished. It was a really special experience.
Now, Dave, you're in phenomenal shape. Why aren't you out there doing Ironman triathlons?
Because I'm not as tough as Will. Nowhere near it. Nowhere close.
So where was the second, and how much time between the two?
The second was in the Woodlands, Texas, just north of Houston.
Right.
And it was about a year later.
Did you see through the 5 that you had done to date your times getting better and better?
No, actually, my first one was my second fastest, and I didn't improve on that one until my 4th.
Why would that be?
Conditions are different in every race. Temperature when you start the marathon can be really warm, making it much more challenging. The bike course can be much more, have much more vertical gain. So all courses are very different.
And you can get weather issues too, I'm sure.
Correct.
What's the best leg for you, swim, bike, or run?
I run really well off the bike. I've done well on my marathons and in Ironman.
And even though you're talking about something that takes hours and hours and hours, every second matters. So when you come out of the pool, the transition to the bike, is that the toughest?
The transition to the bike is the toughest, yeah, because you're just getting done having swum and knowing that you have to ride for hours before you get to the run.
Yeah, and you have to unlock the bike too, Steve. The key's yeah, wet.
If it's a tough neighborhood.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. And the run itself, well, the Ironman distances are what?
It's a 2.4-mile swim.
Okay, let that sink in now. 2.4-mile swim.
A 112-mile bike. And then a marathon, 26.2 miles.
And then a marathon.
And why do they do them in that order?
Yeah, is that tradition?
Probably liability. I think if people swam last, it would get, get pretty ugly.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, people die.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you'd think you could cool off better if you swim last, too.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah.
But... Now, Mary, you're in tremendous shape. Would you ever do this?
No.
Okay.
I can't right. swim. I swimming yeah, that... is just so hard for me. I don't know why. I don't have any interest in swimming either. And just the thought of everybody in the water at once, and I don't know.
Well, my wife's
love to bike. I'd love to do a relay thing where I only sure. have to bike or run. You know.
Well, my wife's done the
Someone
mini triathlons.
Someone else can do the swimming for me. Yeah.
And in the mini triathlons, where everything's tight, and she's a really good swimmer, but where everything is tight, the concern is you're getting kicked in the head.
Yeah.
People are all over you.
Elbows.
Do you have that in the Ironman?
Oh yes, you do.
So people are all over you there as well.
Yes.
But Will, you can do the relays too in those.
Yes, you can. You can do relays in yeah. those as well.
Oh, so you only have to do the marathon.
And the 120 bike run.
Well, it's yeah. better than the swim.
Right.
So there are certain things that come with a competition that you just understand, but you can't train yourself to be kicked in the head while you're swimming.
Well, I guess unless you're a boxer, no, you can't train for that.
So what's the toughest part of that that whole regimen for you? I mean, I know you've told me before that we were talking off the air a second ago. You're a really good runner. You said that on the air. But is it the swim or the bike that's tougher for you?
I enjoy the bike. It's my weakest of the three disciplines, but I enjoy it a lot. The toughest is probably the run, just because it's a long time to be out on the course, and you face some pretty tough demons at times when you're out there so long.
So when your brain says quit, 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 what do you say?
Keep going.
You can stop, but you got to keep going.
You create small goals. Run to that.
Make it to the next thing.
Exactly.
So start to finish from the time that you get in the water till the time you finish the marathon, how much time has elapsed?
You have to be done within 17 hours. The ones that I've done have been between about 9:20 and 10:30.
What is your best time?
9:23.
23?
Now, are you eating during this? You have to.
Yes, you have to. They say stuff. Exactly. Nutrition ends up being the fourth discipline in an Ironman just because you're out there for so long. So you have to be very disciplined in how frequently you consume fluids, electrolytes, and calories, and how much you're consuming per hour.
Well, you're an amazing athlete, and you should be saluted for that, and I hope we've gotten that point across. But tell us who David Kuhn is.
David Kuhn is a 65-year-old blind athlete. He started triathlon probably about 7 years ago. Swam for the first time, actually. Actually, he probably started 5 years ago because he swam.
He's legally blind.
He's legally blind, yes.
Okay, so let's try to imagine that kid. You're swimming blind.
Mm-hmm. He learned to swim at the age of 60 5 years ago. And triathlon's kind of given him a new meaning. He's done a number of triathlons and attempted 4 Ironman so far, completing 1.
And you are going to assist him in the next one?
Yes, I'm going to be guiding him through Ironman Wisconsin in 10 days.
And where is it?
In Madison.
This is an amazing story because the circumstances in which David became blind are tragic.
Correct.
What happened?
David, in 1981, was hit by a drunk driver and pinned in his truck. And he didn't lose his vision immediately. So this was when he was about 28 or 29 years old. But he had irreparable damage to his retinas, causing him to go blind after the accident happened.
So here's a guy, I don't know if he had a family at that point, but he's a young guy with nothing but life ahead of him, whose life has irreversibly changed. When did he start getting interested in fitness and doing triathlons?
He got interested probably about after he retired, actually. It's only been in triathlons in the past 5 years.
So was it something to do? Was it therapy? Was it a combination of both?
I think it was a combination of both for him.
And how did you meet?
I met him through a friend of mine who was supposed to guide him and had a season-ending injury. And over 4th of July weekend, I came back, and he was looking for somebody to step in because his season was ended. He didn't want David Kuhn's season to end. So I decided that I would step in. It had been something I'd always wanted to do, so I decided to guide him.
Well, you're paying the sport forward in a big way here. So when you swim, are you tethered to him?
Yes, we're tethered at the thigh, at the upper thigh.
Okay. And are you mostly verbally guiding him, or how does that work?
Visually guiding him.
Visually.
So I sight for him, and then anytime he bumps into me, he makes a slight adjustment, or if he feels a tension on the tether, he'll make a slight adjustment.
Okay. And then bicycle built for two? How does that work?
It's a tandem bike, so I pilot it. And he rides in the seat, the stoker seat right behind me.
Is he pumping too?
We're both pumping at the exact same cadence. Our wheels are attached, our pedals are attached together.
So it's like a crew. It's like rowing.
Yes.
Okay. And then you finish that and it's off to the run.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're tethered again.
Yes.
All right. Again, I don't know what's more amazing, that he's swimming blind or that he's running blind.
I think both are pretty incredible.
Has he described what it's like for him?
He has described some circumstances in the swim. So the only, sight that he has is light perception. Okay. So he can tell when the sun is out and when it's not. And when it's not and he's swimming, it creates a very dark environment for him, which can be kind of liberating almost, he said.
It's got to be goosebumps for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really special that you're doing this.
It'll be a pretty special experience.
Please give them our best. And tell everybody what you're raising money for.
I'm raising money for World Bicycle Relief.
And what is that?
It's a nonprofit organization based out of here in Chicago. They provide bikes in mostly third world countries, mostly in Africa, for $147. They provide bikes to families in need so that they can bridge the distance gap that keeps people from having access to education, basic resources that we're so blessed with, and healthcare.
You're an amazing guy.
Oh, thank you.
You got your own family?
I do not. Sisters and family, yes, but I'm not married or no kids yet.
Anybody else in your family an athlete at this level?
Yes, my youngest sister and I have done 3 Ironmans together.
Well, how cool is that?
And she works for World Bicycle Relief as well.
My youngest sister and I got sushi. that was a week ago. We haven't seen each other.
But that was nice.
That was nice. Well, you're an amazing guy. I wish you nothing but success. If people want to donate, where should they go?
There's a link that we can put out on the
We'll put it out on our social media as well.
That I've sent out. There's World Bicycle Relief. You can also just go onto their webpage and read a little bit more about the organization and click the donate link.
All right, worldbicyclerelief.org. If we search Will Geiger, G-I-E-I-G-E-R.
G-E-I-G-E-R,
yes. We'd find it there.
Yes.
Be safe. Stay healthy.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. And
I'm going to go on the elliptical in a little while downstairs.
Good. Let me know how that works out.
Yeah.
It's 9:56. Bill and Wendy next at 720 WGN.